Hello, everybody. This is Love, Lust, and Laughter. We need a change of pace, yes? This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host. Masturbation. And sex toys. Dr. Carol Queen is back this week, part two. We're going to discuss these topics. If you missed last week's show, please check out the archived version because we spoke about being sex positive and about sexual orientation issues and transgender identities. And welcome back to this program once more, Dr. Carol Queen.
Dr. Diana, I'm really pleased to be back. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. So you co-wrote, but I think, well, you and Char Rendor, were you the lead author? Probably.
Yeah,
or was it really a co-writing?
I was lead author, but it really became such a collaboration as we began to work together. She started out being my project manager, kind of to keep me going and organized.
Yes.
And organized. And shortly it became so clear that she had all the things to contribute. So I'm delighted to have had a chance to work with her. She's the author of The Femme's Guide to the Universe and one of the geniuses behind Sir Productions, the lesbian porn company. So she's formidable herself.
Yes. Well, so we're talking about the book, The Sex and Pleasure Book, Good Vibrations Guide to Great Sex for Everyone. And I really love this book. It's comprehensive. It advises and enlightens. It amuses. It encourages so that sex and intimacy can be so much more fulfilling. And isn't that what we're needing in this life, to have sexual fulfillment and satisfaction, especially with all of the horrible news? We need to relate and put ourselves in a different part of our brains. It's really good for us to have sex. And of course, masturbation, we're going to focus in on that. I have not in the past, and this is year 7 for me on Progressive Radio Network, I've rarely focused on masturbation. And it seems like this is one word. It's a simple word, but it's also complex. Because for many, relationships
for many
are the goal.
Too, of course. I mean, a lot of people learn to be shamed about it or to think that it's second best.
Yeah, and that it's second best. And then they may lose out on, nurturing a sense of self-love. It gets lost in the mix because we think that relationships are the goal. But
that's
whereas
right.
Masturbation can really help with, especially with a woman's sexuality, don't you think?
Well, that seems to be really borne out by sex research and all kinds of voices from women themselves saying they would not have been able to really get in touch with their orgasmic selves if it weren't for masturbation, to therapists. I'm sure there are times when you suggest to a person that they could use the exploration phase of masturbation very much to their advantage, whether or not their goal is to partner with a lover or not. And that's something that I think many people just don't ever hear as a message, that there are professionals who step up and say, the best thing you could do right now is to learn your body, learn your responses. You'll be better equipped both for solo times and partner times with that under your belt, so to speak.
Yes. For almost 11 years, I co-led with Dr. Maria Flaherty two women's sexuality groups, and all the women had sexual trauma in their past.
Yeah.
And consequently, no surprise to you, maybe a surprise to some people listening, but a lot of these women were unable to reach orgasm because their boundaries were compromised and they didn't feel safe and so on. So we suggested that they explore their genitals, hold up a mirror and look at them, and masturbate alone, figure out what turned themselves on so that they could be orgasmic.
And in a situation like that, of course, there's another really crucial healing thing that happens, which is that those women begin to learn that their genitals, their body, their sexuality is theirs, not somebody else's, who has, you know, acted upon them in a non-consensual way or a problematic way of some sort. You know, I think that many people who discover masturbation naturally, who just, you know, reach down at some point in their lives and find good feelings and continue to do whatever act got them there, or, you know, embellish it however they do or whatever, I think that many people do just come to this naturally, but there is so much repression, so much anti-masturbation sentiment, so much of a sense that if girls especially, but the little boys and gender-neutral people have also gotten this message, I think, that if they touch themselves, there's it's dirty, there's something wrong with them, they'll screw themselves up in some way. And, of course, behind all that is a sort of a conservative worry that a young person who has experienced arousal will be uncontrollable and their morals will go and all that, whereas if someone knows that this is their territory, they can actually prevent things from happening to them as well as saying yes when they're ready to say yes. That's what I think anyway.
I think that makes so much sense, and your message needs to get out more. And some of these conservatives have no idea about this, that ultrasounds have revealed that masturbation starts in the womb.
That's right.
And in 1996, I must have sex on my brain. Well, it wouldn't be surprising, would it?
No, it's not at all.
Anyway, a letter to the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, several doctors described an ultrasound in which a 32-week-old female fetus used her hand to touch her genitals, focusing mainly on her clitoris, and the movements continued on and off for 20 minutes and ended in the rapid muscular contractions of her body, followed by relaxation and rest. Isn't that just astounding?
That's extraordinary.
It's just that, you know, this is all happening before we know the perceived differences between right and wrong, because we know what feels right, what feels good. Mm-hmm. And this little 32-week-year-old female fetus had discovered it.
And, you know, even often young parents find that they have never been told by anyone that their infant or their toddler might touch themselves. They think there's something direly wrong.
Yeah.
It's part of many people's growing up process from childhood into adolescence into adulthood. Some people don't discover masturbation until they're adults, but I think many more people did discover it at one time, were stopped, were shamed, were punished. And, you know, we don't remember every single little thing that happens when we're tiny, when we get a little older. And so it's very common, I think, for people to have that experience, just forget it, just not have it retained consciously, but then carry funny feelings, not good funny either, about masturbation or pleasure or arousal into their adulthood, and we'll never know how much of a problem this is. It's impossible to statistically track it, but sex therapists talk about this sort of thing with their clients and patients all the time, as I know you know.
Yeah.
And I think that I mean, when a person comes into good vibrations to look for a toy or to look for a book, sometimes it's pretty obvious in talking to them that this is the sort of thing they're up against, that they just can't feel good about their body's changes in arousal, or they can't reach arousal at all. And sometimes there are other reasons than what we're talking about here, but it's pretty common to hear that people start masturbating, but then they feel scared about it and they stop.
Yeah, that's a very good segue, because I want to talk to you about your many years at Good Vibrations as a sex educator. So let's talk about that, because you have, I'm just a second, we've, you're getting a siren.
I was going to say, there's a crisis somewhere, I can tell.
Well, I live down the street from the fire station, so we sometimes get that. But you have been at Good Vibrations many years, and tell us your title, and tell us some highlights of being at Good Vibrations.
My pleasure. Well, I have the best job title in the universe, I think.
Okay, what is it?
Good Vibrations staff sexologist, company historian, and curator of the Antique Vibrator Museum.
Oh, and so today, us talking about, and I knew that, of course, masturbation and sex toys is just right up your alley.
Pretty much. And
yeah.
Of course, Good Vibrations is a company founded by a woman, Joni Blank, who just died a little over a year ago after an amazing life.
Yeah.
So sad to lose her, but she had an amazing life. There are people who come and go from this world who make an impact, and she was one of them, absolutely one of them.
She was.
And knew it. She, before she died, was able to have people tell her how much her work meant to them. And, you know, I think that should be on all of our bucket list if possible, right? If we can affect the world around us a little bit in a positive way, that's a real good start.
So last
Joni
time I
founded the company 40 years ago.
Yeah, 40 years ago. The last time I saw her was about 5 years ago at a Quad S conference in Los Angeles. And I told her, and I had I knew her some over the years because of the many years I was in Palo Alto. So it come up. And I think I told the story about how I had a group of older women, told this last week, where they were on a field trip before Christmas to go to Good Vibrations. They had a wonderful time. But Joni Blank had a vision, which at the time in the 70s was unusual and original. And then she must have hand-picked you because... What? Because tell us your story as it coincided with her.
Well, I think that she did handpick me, actually, in retrospect. I mean, it's amazing to me at this point that I have now been at Good Vibrations longer than Joni was, and I'm inspired by her work all the time. You know, in this world or out of it, she is and was an inspiration. But I was at the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco, the sexological graduate program, and Joni and I met. This is the best origin story of a job ever, I think. Joni and I met at a Betty Dodson masturbation workshop. And
that's a good
not
story.
Everyone. Now, this wouldn't be appropriate for everyone's job interview, but given who I was and given who Joni was, it was fine. We clicked. And she called me some months later. It wasn't right away, but she called me when she had a one-day-a-week job opening. She needed somebody to fill in on Saturday, the busiest day, to boost up the floor staff of people who were helping customers. And so that's how I got to Good Vibrations in July of 1990. And initially I trained to do the floor shifts, of course, that she had invited me to do, but she also had me work in mail order so that I did this sort of thing on the phone, which is a little more challenging in certain ways because you have to describe things about the sex toys that in the store you can just put a sex toy in somebody's hand, say, here, you can turn this on if you like, you'll see how the vibration is and so forth. and you've got a little more describing to do on a customer service line. And then she also had me begin to develop the formal educational programming of the vibrations, because back in the day what Joni did was send all of her new staff members, of which there weren't all that many, I think there were a dozen of us or so when I got started, to San Francisco Sex Information's training, which is a terrific.
Oh, that was excellent, yes.
In those days, it was a terrific sex ed training. I had been on the training staff at SVCI for a year when I started at Good Vibrations, in fact. It's where I got my partner, Robert. In a way, we have sort of a dual origin story, one with our pants off and with our pants on, and Susie with pants on. And so the sexuality community of San Francisco very much was the place that fostered Good Vibrations in its growth and its the impact that it had on the community. In a city different from San Francisco, it would have been very hard in 1977 for a sex toy store to get founded at all, much less to thrive and make its own space so that it was a recognized and an honored member of the city. We just got given legacy business status in San Francisco last winter, because it's been 40 years, and in another city, we would have been hounded out of town by zoning laws, you know, even though Joni was a woman, a master's in public health, a sex educator, a writer. She, you know, her bona fides were very clear that she took this stuff seriously. And thank goodness she was in a town where it was acceptable to take this stuff seriously, and you could do something innovative like Good Vibrations. So,
yeah.
So that's the field that she plowed. That I was still an undergraduate when she was doing all this. I knew about Good Vibrations from almost the time that it opened, but it was a while before I actually got to visit it my own self, and still longer before I joined the team.
So you mentioned in the early days having to describe over the phone, but as I understand it, Good Vibrations, goodvibes.com is the website, that a person, if they're buying a toy online, that they can do a live chat with a personal shopper.
Yes, and you can speak by phone. If people want to do the chat function, chat functions are comfortable for people sometimes, but a lot of times people just want to hear another voice explaining things. You can ask questions. You can let the person know if there are gaps in your information that you want them to give you some more information about. I mean, obviously, since you've read the Sex and Pleasure book, you've seen that Good Vibrations has a lot to say about everything, and this book is sort of a distillation of all the Good Vibes knowledge that we train staff members with, that we tell customers all the time, you know, with a sprinkling of my own activist and sexological background. And Good Vibrations' voice and my voice are not exactly the same, but we're pretty intertwined after all this time, I think, and that's a great honor.
Yes, and you encourage people, you and the other, they're almost always women, aren't they, the salespeople in the sex stores?
Far more often women, and these days often genderqueer identified people who may or may not strongly identify with one or another of two genders. That's a 21st century innovation. Folks of this description in the 20th century may not have felt as though they had as much space in the world to occupy in some cases, and it's good that that's changing. We've got some fellows on the sales floor, too, at our various stores, and it's wonderful to be a woman-founded and, for the longest time, very specifically women-focused business, where there are a lot of women on the sales floor, a lot of people who might walk in thinking that they're going to enter a zone that is, you know, sex toy stores were initially really very male-coded. They were owned by men, run by men, usually staffed by men, and, you know, it's not that, that males can't put together nice sex stores, but there was a gendered gap in terms of how the products were chosen, how things were represented. It just that a woman would come along and do this was innovative. At this time in our history, it may seem less clear to people, but at that point, it was a significant difference and a significant advance. And so, it's great to be able for women to walk in and speak to other women. That's a strong, creates a strong sense of safety in many people. But it's also great to walk in and have somebody who looks quite different from you walk up and care about your well-being, know what they know, and be able to guide you anyway. You know, not the stereotypical computer science student bent over textbooks of yore from a dirty bookstore, right?
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with anybody majoring in anything, getting a nice evening job at a sex store.
Yes.
Everybody's got to work.
And
but
when I send any of my clients off, here in the Pacific Northwest, we have a Babeland, which is one of the first in Seattle, and we have some lover stores and this and that. But I always encourage them. I say, you're going to find the salespeople very approachable and very knowledgeable, and you need to ask questions. Where does this go? And what does this button do?
How do you turn it on? How do you turn it off? These are the new technology questions.
And try before you buy. That obviously, just as you already mentioned, in your hand, but you can, for obvious reasons, but you try it in your hand, the model, right? And you can test it and see the different settings and all of that.
Well, and I know Babeland from back in the day. The women who founded Babeland approached Good Vibrations initially, and one of them interned with us for several weeks and learned the ropes. I trained her in talking about vibrators, if I remember correctly. Terrific woman named Claire Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. And Claire and Rachel, her Babeland partner, recently decided that they wanted to retire or move on to the next project. And so Good Vibrations just bought the Babeland stores. So we're busy making friends with our long time sister store that
we worked
on several projects together with Babeland back in the 90s and early zeros, like a National Masturbation Month and different PR intensives that we were trying to do, saying nice things about Dr. Joycelyn Elders and all of that.
Right.
And we're learning what it's like to have two different but very compatible brands working together. So we're so glad that they held down the fort there in Seattle, which is absolutely a city that should have a good sex store. More cities need
exactly.
good sex stores.
I have a
Seattle
great
without
quote.
One, I can't imagine.
Yes. I have a great quote from Rachel Venning, the woman you just mentioned, the co-founder of Babeland. And here it is. For a lot of women, a vibrator is an essential part of their sex life. For many women, a vibrator is a guaranteed orgasm. And I think that is true.
That's absolutely right. And for many people, you know, there's so many reasons for that. One of them is that a vibrator gives a consistent stimulation. It doesn't really change unless you push the button that makes it change. Some of them have various types of on-off buzz kind of situations now, wave patterns and things like that. Or if it runs out of battery or juice in some way, that's a terrible thing when that happens. But you can plug it back in and start over again later. And the thing is that if someone is not fully in touch with their own arousal, what it feels like to become more aroused, what the point just below orgasm feels like, so you know you're on the right track, that plateau phase that Masters and Johnson talked about and that some people definitely do experience, that's a place where someone who doesn't have a lot of sexual experience or who has never gotten all the way to really knowing that they have had an orgasm sometimes gets stuck. And they get up in their head, and they start to worry about if they're going to come or whatever else they have to worry about. We've got a lot of things to worry about these days, and if we can have good enough sex to forget about most of them most of the time, we're doing pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
But that's the point at which consistent stimulation, not a partner whose tongue gets a Charlie horse or who comes before you do or whatever,
right,
will make a difference. And then when you know what you're looking for in terms of the sensations in your body, it can, in fact, become easier to be orgasmic and responsive in partner sex, too. And there's one of the things about masturbation that gives it a little bit of a bad rap is this idea that if you learn your own responses, it makes you less likely to respond to another person.
And that's not true.
I think that's not true. It's perfectly possible to get into some kind of masturbation situation where nothing that another human being does can relate to it, but that's not your basic masturbation situation. That's something specialized, probably with lots of bells and whistles. It's not the common experience. Not that there's anything wrong with adding your bells and whistles and your fetishes and your fantasies and your extra sex toys and all of that. Nothing wrong with that. Many people are gourmet self-lovers, not basic microwave self-lovers, but there's a way in which learning more about what our bodies are capable of means that our bodies can be capable of even more. And I think that's true in sports. People understand that well in sports, but it's true as far as sexuality is concerned, too. And that's what toys can open a door to.
And there are some concerns voiced by some of my clients, and I reassure them that it's basically a myth that too much vibration causes a clit to go numb and never, ever find its original sensitivity. And we know this not to be true. Women can sort of stir things up a little bit if they find they can only reach orgasm with a vibrator and they want to make themselves a little more sensitive to a partner, they can put aside the vibrator for a bit, and enjoy partner sex. But it will not. The clitoris is endowed with 6,000 to 8,000 nerve fibers, and it's not going to go numb. It's going to retain its sensitivity.
The grain of truth in this numbness myth is actually interesting when people think about it. They go, oh, yeah, I guess that makes a lot of sense. It's especially for those people who use vibrators and put a fair amount of pressure on their clitoris or near their clitoris with the vibrator.
Yeah.
This is common with the magic wand, for example, because it's great to do. And that's a strong vibrator. And there are other kinds, too, that will have this effect to varying degrees. But people basically mash that vibrator up against themselves because it feels so nice. And if they go numb, they blame the vibration and the fact that they're doing this, but they don't think that the pressure would make them go numb if it was some other kind of an activity. I compare it to, going out to Dolores Park for a picnic, and you lean back on your hand and look at the beautiful view of the city, and then pretty soon you pick up your hand that you've been leaning on and shake it, and it's numb because you've been leaning on it.
Yeah,
or when you wake up with a numb hand because you've lain on it or your partner's lain on it when you're going to sleep. So this pressure drives the blood out of the area. The blood being gone means the nerves don't respond as well or as strongly. The sensation gets cut way back. And 20, 30 minutes later, it's all back to normal again. So that's something that many people have experienced and sometimes get really quite frightened by. But seasoned vibrator users know that the blood's going to come flowing right back in. And you know, if they want to start the vibrator up again in 10 minutes, it'll probably feel real nice again.
There's another aspect to sex toys with partners. I have encountered, it seems to be less and less, but over the years I have encountered male partners who feel threatened by the sex toy, the vibrator.
Right.
And I say, you know, let's reframe this. Let's try to see the vibrator as your friend. It can go much longer than you can go, and you can think of creative ways in which to use a sex toy, maybe along with some of your body parts, tongue or cock. Or
that's right.
Yeah. And so I think a more confident man, or maybe just a more, what goes together, maybe enlightened man, will see the vibrator not as a threat, but as a friend.
Right. And, you know, if somebody's had pretty poor sex education, which we discussed this last time, most of us didn't get great sex education, and some of us got really very awful sex education. The idea that people pick up from, really just from the culture almost, is that this, the natural way that sex is supposed to work is penis and vagina, is intercourse based, is everybody has an orgasm from that, and that's not actually how most people find their greatest pleasure is derived. Great pleasure can be derived from intercourse. It can be orgasmic, but it isn't orgasmic for most women, and it's we almost never talk about the fact that it's not orgasmic for a lot of men. There are men who can't come during intercourse either because they're not getting optimal stimulation from that act. So there's a lot to be said about the different ways that different people of all genders can and can't come. If there's no one way that everybody experiences or should. But this idea that if that's the norm, then everything else is a variation that gets you to that or takes you further away from that. And I think that's part of the problem, that she shouldn't need anything but me and my penis, or maybe me and my, you know, maybe me and my cunnilingus skills ahead of time. Which, good for everyone who develops cunnilingus skills. I'm never going to argue against that, heavens no. But the idea that you can't bring technology, you know, as this is the 21st century, we have technology everywhere around us.
Everywhere.
Now, and we embrace it for the most part. There are some people who are a little irritated about it, but mainly that ship has sailed. We have adopted technology in so many ways. And that, I think, may be one of the things that's shifting, especially among younger generations of men.
Yes,
this idea
that's right.
That, well, you know, if my cell phone in my pocket can help me figure out how to drive to an address where I've never been before, and I think nothing of that, then maybe this little gizmo here that maybe even plugs into a cell phone or Bluetooths to it might help me in other areas of my life. And the idea that sex toy companies are fully embracing technology and computer chipping and Bluetooth and things like that.
And we vibe.
And there are many wonderful options.
And
WeVibe
does that too.
WeVibe for sure.
So that you can have remote sex.
And so many people with penises, especially ones who are cis males, have just never thought that they should put a vibrator on themselves and see how it feels. These are coded for women in our culture so much.
Mm.
And the fact is, plenty of men find, and plenty of penis holders, whatever their identity is, find that the vibration feels just as terrific on the head of their penis as it does on any of our clitorises. And that's another reason that somebody might jump the fence away from, well, this vibrator is my rival, to bring that thing to bed. That feels nice. And the WeVibe very specifically uses that surprising stimulation. Surprise, not surprising to me, of course, but it is surprising to many people that a penis is sensitive in the same way to vibration. But the fact is, the nerve endings that feel vibration are present on both organs. It's not a one or the other kind of a situation.
That's right. That's right. I'm just looking at your book on page 169. You have the WeVibe there, make a U-turn. I love that because it can be used. It fits into the vagina and for penetrative intercourse and allows the male partner's penis to get as much stimulation. And maybe even the wearer's G-spot, the woman's G-spot.
Yeah, the penis will press it up into the G-spot very likely. And some
mm-hmm.
people find that their fit is such that if they would like a little more tightness in an intercourse situation, the WeVibe can even add just that little extra amount of vibrator inside is enough to make the whole experience feel tighter and a tighter fit as well. And
mm-hmm.
that isn't everybody's first priority in intercourse, but some people really do find that sensation to be erotic. And you know, any sensation that we find erotic that we can figure out a safe way to explore consensually,
mm-hmm.
let's bring it on. Let's see what...
Absolutely.
What
and I really
can.
Like that your book talks about male sex toys, and you just mentioned that a lot of guys up until maybe recently didn't have an idea that they could use a vibrator on themselves. And I have some clients who have used the Fleshlight.
Yes.
Because they have trouble ejaculating. And I had one male client and his wife. I saw them as a couple. And he was an inhibited ejaculator, and he used the Fleshlight and got accustomed to using that, which mimics the vagina, the feelings of the vagina. And so ultimately they were able, after some work, to conceive a child and have a baby.
Wonderful. Yeah. The thing about sex toys is that they can broaden our ability to appreciate pleasure. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
have to be just one thing. And
mm-hmm.
for people who are having partner sex challenges, that can actually be a really good thing, because the lesson that not only one thing is the key to your source of response
mm-hmm.
is a pretty positive message, I think. People,
mm-hmm.
I used to have a wonderful friend, Stephen Brown, one of my San Francisco sex information trainer friends,
mm-hmm.
who was also a sex surrogate. And as you probably know, male sex surrogates are not a dime a dozen. There are far fewer men who have done surrogacy than women. And Stephen would say this amazingly wise thing to me, and at this point he was talking about the need to condomize for safer sex. This was
mm-hmm.
the height of the AIDS epidemic era, and he would say, if you only have one thing that gets you off, and you have to alter that or change it, stop it, to be safe, then that is an enormous loss. If you have 120 things,
mm-hmm.
losing that one thing or changing that one thing is not going to be as big a deal as it will be to that person who only ever got off a particular way. And this is not to denigrate people who have their favorite thing, of course, and it's not surprising
mm-hmm.
That many people find out what works and then stick with that. But the idea that other things could work too, I think too few people explore that idea, and it just adds to the pleasure, and it adds to the possible sources of compatibility between two people. And that's one of the things that you're talking about when you're talking about bringing a toy to bed with a partner.
Yeah.
Is how do you make the experience more compatible and just more better?
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned this, Dr. Carol, because that is really true. And it also applies to people that are primarily, say, have a foot fetish. Well, and they'll say, I'll say, would you like to expand your sexual repertoire in terms of arousal and orgasm? And they'll always say yes. And it's often hard to get rid of a well-established fetish. But if they can learn other ways to get off, it expands their horizons tremendously, doesn't it?
Yes, and expanding doesn't need to involve getting rid of something.
No, exactly.
Yeah, there are situations where maybe somebody would want to stop a particular kind of behavior, the safety question, things that are of questionable consent, you know, those kinds of things. Of course, people might really, truly need help to address that's how they've rolled up till now, sexually speaking, but adding on to an otherwise completely delightful and harmless fetish, I think if all sex therapists ever did was help people expand their fetishes into, you know, more and more thousand flowers blooming, I think it would be the happiest profession on the planet. You know, that's just that's lovely. That's lovely stuff. And it's not anything to do with telling someone that they can't be who they are sexually, or that there's a reason why they must not be that way anymore. You know, there are those situations when people may come to that conclusion, but all the rest of us, we can add to the repertoire, and, you know, just like dancing or singing, it just, you know, it makes us better musicians when we can do that.
Nicely put. So I wanted to talk a little bit, because you are involved with the history of your museum there at Great Good Vibrations, and
yes,
you and I both know that vibrators were first used by doctors to treat women for hysteria, and this was a condition that was once considered a disease, but whose diagnosis is now outdated. So talk a little bit about, because you have a museum at the original Good Vibrations store?
It's actually at our Polk Street store, which means that people who visit San Francisco, a lot of times visitors will stay downtown or on Union Square and the hotels down there or Fisherman's Wharf or whatever, and we're not very far from a cable car line. So even visitors who are doing the full San Francisco treat experience, cable car on over using the California Street Line is just a block and a little bit away. And at the Polk Street store, we've got a room in the back. We used it as an art gallery first, which was swell, as you know, from the Seattle Erotic Arts Festival. A little erotic art will make your day. But
that's right. And have you been up here, by the way?
Been last year. I had a delightful time. In fact, I'm looking at their bookmark that I have up over my desk right now.
Isn't that a great bookmark? I love that.
I don't think people who are interested in sex have done the full Monty until they've been to the Seattle Erotic Arts Festival. It's really quite something.
And David Steinberg has been a guest on this program a number of times. And he's prominent in this Seattle. And I'm an art activist for that.
The arts are a way for us to enter into appreciating and thinking things that are not just like us, and whether it's an abstract painting or whether it's an image of something that we've never done sexually before, the arts give us a window in, right? So we were having a wonderful time putting all this nice art up, but then we thought, you know, we've got all these vibrators in boxes Joni Blank had been collecting vibrators since before she founded Good Vibrations. And the history of the vibrators was delved into by the terrific Rachel Maines, a historian who's based in Cornell. And in the early years of the 21st century, she published her book that she'd been researching for at least 20 years called The Technology of Orgasm, which is how we know the details of this history. We had some sketchy ideas before, but the details, Rachel really was the person who uncovered all of this. And so the story was Galen, the great Greek physician, actually was Turkish, he was an immigrant, but Galen thought there was a thing that was troubling some women that he determined must have had to do with their uterus wandering around in their body, causing trouble. Hysteria. He named it hysteria because hyster is the root word, the Greek root word for uterus. Yeah. So
that's it. He only figured out here, right?
That vulval clitoral massage to the point of, quote, hysterical paroxysms of relief would make the women feel better. And of course it would, because everybody who has been able to have an orgasm knows that there are certain times when you feel down or not too well that an orgasm will make you feel better, at least for a little while.
Right.
And so this was taught as a medical technique. And after the Industrial Revolution, it began to be systematized in little machines. First, hand crank and clockwork vibrators were invented.
Mm-hmm.
And once electricity was part of the mix, electrical vibrators were the next big thing. And that was, about 150 years ago, roughly.
And I understand, Carol, that vibrators became so popular that they were the fifth appliance to be electrified, following the sewing machine, the fan, the tea kettle, and the toaster. But they got in there. They were number five.
Isn't that a fabulous fun fact? And in fact, a statistic I remember from Rachel Maine's book is that in 1917, in the United States, there were more electric vibrators than electric toasters. So they surpassed, and nobody doesn't love a toaster. So what 21st century audiences have to say about this story is, how could that possibly have been, that vibrators were this common, this acceptable? And the short answer, of course, is that nobody said in so many words that they were a sex toy. There were some hint-like ad copy written. My favorite one is, almost like a miracle, it is the healing power of vibration when rightly applied.
When rightly applied.
You can only say, well, isn't that the truth?
And they were, of course, marketed as personal massagers.
And as all over health implements, meaning that you could also deal with your tuberculosis symptoms, dandruff, your hemorrhoids, whatever you had, a vibrator would help you with it. And so any home, without ever having to say, we want something so that Aunt Tilly can have an orgasm, or not even knowing that that's what an orgasm is. People have a hard time wrapping their mind around this, but we've agreed that we've had terrible sex education in our generations. Our grandmother's generations were even worse, and so female sexuality was not researched, talked about, except in very moralistic terms. So as Rachel says, this is an example of a socially camouflaged technology. The vibrator can hide in plain sight until the very end of the teens, when another new technology gets more and more popular, moving pictures, and some of the moving pictures are porn. And the same traveling salesman that takes the vibrator around and sells it on the town square to the ladies in the afternoon shows up at the Moose Lodge at night with a projector, and all of Aunt Tilly's husbands and brothers and everybody else go down, all the men in the town go down and watch some porn. And there in the movie can be clearly seen a vibrator being used as a sexual foreplay device. And then the cat's out of the bag.
The cat's out of the bag. I mean, I think our sexual histories are fascinating, just fascinating. And you take people on tours sometimes because you're clearly well informed of this museum have on Polk Street?
Every month, every third Sunday from 3 to 4, I welcome people in for a tour of the museum, tell them this history and some more fun facts. We've got a nice wall talking text that my wonderful colleague Sharon Lee put together, so that we've got a picture of Galen and a picture of Freud and a picture of some early porn, and we've got it all up there. And people can walk in and self-tour the museum any afternoon. It's part of Good Vibrations, and they can walk right past the new vibrators and look at the old vibrators, or the other way around. And so it's such a pleasure to be able to have a role in this. It's a fantastic little one-room museum, but we've got close to 100 vibrators in there, spanning almost the entire 20th century. You know, we started in the late 1970s, so we don't consider anything antique past that. It's like asking a lady her age. You know, it's not an antique.
Yeah, right.
If I carried that lunchbox as a child, it's not an antique yet.
Yes.
What's that doing in this antique store? That's not old.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's see. I also wanted to ask you about the current sex toys, the most popular ones, at least in your experience, in your stores. Can you highlight a couple of popular ones?
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many things to choose from now, but I'll tell you the magic wand that I mentioned before.
Oh, and that's been around.
The only thing that still plugs into the wall, although they have now made a chargeable one. Most of the higher end sex toys in this day and age are rechargeable rather than battery operated or wall plug operated.
Yeah.
But the magic wand just hit the sweet spot for so many people. People really love the kind of vibration that it delivers. It's a kind of a lower vibration than some other vibes, and just by golly, just like it. So it's really still one of our very best sellers. We have really loved a couple of European companies that were some of the early innovators in making vibrators clad in silicone. It used to be that vibrators had sort of, what's that made of? What kind of rubber is that? What?
Mm-hmm.
An old colleague of mine used to call it mystery rubber.
Mystery rubber.
Now, silicone, which is so much easier to clean, carries vibrations nicely. You can color it beautiful colors, so whatever your aesthetic, you can find a toy that matches it. The silicone company, the silicone vibrator companies like Fun Factory and Lilo.
And that's German, I think. Fun Factory.
Yes, Fun Factory is German, and Lilo is Scandinavian, and there are terrific vibrators that have been made and sell really well. The G-Twist and G-Squirrel from Fun Factory, we had a hand in helping them design G-Spotter vibrators. Yes, and my favorite Lilo, I think, will always be the GG. I think it's a terrific little vibrator that also has G-Spot function, but also it has a sort of a flat-ish spot on the tip, which means that when you turn it around and aim it at the clitoris, gives a little more coverage than a pointy vibrator would. And if people are listening to you not knowing exactly what I'm talking about, they should pull up a vibrator store website or come in and visit Good Vibrations or Babeland when they can, because they'll see that there are so many types. The Wee Vibe that you mentioned is definitely has a big fan base. There's another vibrator that has a Bluetooth connection and that you can use with your smartphone, made by the wonderful people at Oh My Bod, who are the people who first pioneered plugging your vibrator into your MP3 player so that it would vibrate to the beat of the music you listen to. isn't that a great idea?
I think that's a great idea because so many
love our music.
We love our music, and so many people have sort of conditioned themselves to respond to certain songs as they make love. So you add
that's right,
to it.
And it's a wonderful way to add a new dimension. To sexuality is adding music to it. Many people haven't thought of that, but I hope that this will inspire them to do that.
Sure.
So the Oh My Bod vibrators all have this quality to them that you can plug them in, and lately they've got the Bluetooth capability, and you can get an app that allows you to use the toy when you and your person are far apart. So that's a lovely aspect, too. And, of course, there are toys for penises that are terrific. You mentioned the Fleshlight series, and those are super popular. They were really innovative. There are others, the upstarts who came a little later but are really good, are the Tanga sleeve products from Japan. Everything from full-on designed sleeves to little eggs that you open it up, and it's a very flexible thing to use on the head of the penis during hand jobs that are wonderful little toys for anybody who is just, if there's a penis in the bed anywhere, people could do way worse than start out with a Tanga egg and just add some sensation and start to play around. And that's another way to reinforce that these toys are not just for women. These are, you know, they used to call these things marital aids, didn't they? We just want to reinforce you don't have to be married. You don't have to have another person with you at all, although if you do, great. And they aren't there to fix anything. They're there to explore what sensual possibilities exist. And I think if we can point our sexual attitude in that direction, then we never know what we're going to find. There are many delights to explore,
and it's a wonderful thing to keep exploring and discovering. And as a senior lady, I am thrilled to be in this process of exploring, continuing to explore, because and having such great sex, because it's my fountain of youth. It's so good for me.
And you're modeling for other people.
Well, exactly.
There isn't an end to pleasure as it may have been implied to them when they were coming up. You know, you and I are both baby boomers. I'm a little younger than you, but not that much. And you know, the messages that we got were not particularly pro-sexual for people, you know, when we were at our sexual, in our years of exploration, the idea
exactly
that our
right.
mothers and our grandmothers should be the sexual, that was not part of.
No.
Of what people...
my grandmother, to be continued. Carol, thank you so much. I want to have you back. You're just the best.
Oh, I would love to.
Thank you again, Carol.
Bye, everybody. Thank you, Diana. Such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye.